We're doing Rav Chaylap on the parasha, Ma'alatam Shel Yisrael, Mei Marom, speech number 36. The level, the great level of the Jewish people. Gilu al yedei tzimtzum, gilu al yedei trachvut. God's revelation in a diminished manner, God's revelation in an expanded manner. Minagdehem shel Yisrael ba'olam, who are the opposers of the Jewish people in the world? Zoama shetil Yishmael beYitzchak. We're going to discuss what was the venom that Yishmael inserted into Isaac. Tafkido shel Avraham etafkida shel Sarah. What was Abraham's task and Sarah's task? Mitatam shel Avot, the passing of the patriarchs Avraham and Adam Arishon. Those are the seven topics we're going to discuss in this speech. It says in the verse, "Vatamot Sarah beKiryat Arba iChevron." Sarah passed away in Kiryat Arba, that is Chevron, beEretz Kenan. "Vayevo Avram nisbod leSarah velivkota." Avram came to eulogize Sarah and weep over her. "Lam nismecha mitat Sarah laKedat Yitzchak." Why are the two juxtaposed? The story of Sarah's passing and the binding of Isaac. "Shal yedei besorat haKedah shenizdamin bena leShchita." The Medrash says when Sarah heard of the binding of her son, that he was taken to be slaughtered, v'kimat shelo nishchat, and it almost, he was a footstep away where he almost wasn't slaughtered, pacha nishmata mimena, so she passed away. V'odamu b'midrash, the Medrash says, v'yarish itcha mitzar, you will see that initially, you will begin minimally, ze Yitzchak, that's Yitzchak, v'achritcha yiske me'od, and then ultimately you will expand greatly. Elu bnei pilakshim. Those are the children of the concubines that Abraham had in the end of the parasha. V'yesh lavin inyan zeh. We have to understand what is the Medrash telling us in this. V'abiyu b'zeh. So the explanation is as follows. Hinei Yisrael shenivru b'tzelem Elokim v'chiba yeterah nodat lahem. The Jewish people were created in Hashem's form. And the Mishnah in Tractate Avo says Hashem revealed a great love for the people when he created them in that form. Mitnamim le'elyon k'shem shu rotze litgalot ken Yisrael rotzim litgalot. We have an element where we are similar to our Creator. Hashem says, I want to be revealed in this world. So do the Jewish people have this desire. Ulam ha'evdel min ha'gilui shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'gilui shel Yisrael. But the difference between our desire and Hashem's desire, she'ha'gilui shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mukhach she'yavo b'derech tzimtzum. Hashem's revelation has to be diminished. Hashem can't, so to speak, Hashem isn't going to reveal himself completely. The world can't handle that. Our creation is a creation that has things that are finite. Everything around us we see is finite. Hashem is infinite. And if Hashem were to reveal that to us, so then we wouldn't be, there wouldn't be a world that's created. Hashem's revelations are always limited, even though Hashem is not limited. But when he reveals himself, everything's limited. 10 commandments. That's all God has to say. 613 mitzvot. Hashem is infinite, yet Hashem gives us things that are finite, because we are finite in a finite world. So Hashem limits himself. That's one of the concepts of Tzimtzum. That Hashem limits himself in his revelations to us. But we have this desire, and we constantly want to reveal the aspect of infinity, the aspect of infinite. Al pi ze anu mevinim shebatorah shebichtav shem giluyav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu hem bemispar. That's why we look at the written law, the written Torah. The Talmud tells us exactly how many letters are in the Torah, how many words are in the Torah. Everything is exact. You miss a letter from the Torah is disqualified. Now you look at the oral law. The oral law is infinite. There's no limit. On the contrary, our sages viewed it as a tragedy that we had to take the oral law and put it in writing, because you can't limit it. The oral law, shimitgalet dafka al yedei Yisrael ha-talmidim ha-vatikim. The Jewish people, through their learning, constantly expand and develop the oral law. V'chol ma she-tamid vatik adid lechadesh le'manu Moshe m'Sinai. And even though Moshe at Sinai, we are told, was taught everything that would be learned in the future. Even the new things we would discuss, cloning, right? All the in vitro fertilization, all the different things we'd still discuss. That was all discussed at Sinai. But nonetheless, every generation has new developments in the oral law. What we're dealing with, no one dealt with before us. Ah, the Talmud does deal with the idea of creating an animal not from an animal. The Talmud does deal with the idea of creating a cow that'll give birth to a pig, even though they couldn't do it. We do have in the Talmud a woman that gets pregnant without an act of intimacy, not immaculate conception, but the idea that there is a possibility of transferring the male seed to the woman without an actual act of intimacy. That is discussed in Talmud. Yeah, but our applications today, a car, an airplane, you know, the Talmud gives an example of a person who takes a vow that's an impossibility. He says, I'll take a box and fly. That's one of the Talmud's examples of something, if you want to take a vow that everyone knows you're not going to do. But in our generation, everything's been developing. Every generation has developments. Levushin de lavish betzafol of lavish beramsha. The Tikune Zohar writes, the clothing he wears in the morning are not the clothing he wears in the afternoon. That's a concept in Torah. The Torah of the morning is not the Torah of the afternoon. You're constantly rejuvenating. There's constant renewal. We're using the system. Within that system, there is development. Ufanim chadashim beim lavanata shel Torah. And there are new aspects of understanding in the Torah. Now, you understand this is a dangerous concept. You have to know the limitations. But within the limitations, you see, Rav Hirsch wrote things that you don't find in Rambam. Rambam wrote things that you don't find in Rashi. Every generation has its developments. Maimonides, Nachmanides, every generation. עד כי אבו שילו ודרך כוכב מיעקב יקום משיח צדקנו אשר זה שמו, אשר יקרא לו השם צדקנו, הוא יהיה התלמיד היותר ותיק ויגלה כל עמוקה ורוחבה של תורה שבעל פה. Till the time of Mashiach, he will reveal all the expansive depth of the oral law, ותורתנו הבל לפני תורתו של משיח. And the Medrash says, our Torah doesn't stand up to anything next to what Mashiach is still going to teach. ולכן תורה שבעל פה היא בחינת אין סוף, כל מגמת ישראל להראות עליה אין סוף ברוך הוא. That's why the oral law, which is our work, the oral law is work. Written law you could learn. Yeah, you could learn the Tanakh and you feel great. You want to work hard? Start learning the oral law. But that's limitless. That's the idea of infinite wisdom that we connect to, and our constant desire is to reveal it, to reveal more and more. לעומת שני אופני הגילויים, גילויו של הקדוש ברוך הוא הבאים צמצום גילויים שישראל הבאים בדרך האינסוף, ישנם כוחות מתנגדים. We have two forces, we said, in this world. Hashem is revealing things in a limited fashion. Israel is trying to reveal things in an expansive fashion. Well, corresponding to these two positive forces, there are two antagonistic forces in the world. Mitzrayim hayta hakoach hamitnaged letorah shebichtav. Mitzrayim, Egypt, was the one who fought what we would call the written Torah. Hem amru shekol kochot gilui tzimtzum mishnam betoch habriyah atzma. They said anything you think is God's revelation, it's part of the creation. It's all within nature. There's nothing God is showing you that we can't do, right? So the sorcerers are saying, we'll replicate any miracle Moshe can do. Their goal is to show there's nothing in Hashem's revelation that we can't do. Egypt had their Nile. The strength of the Egyptians was in their calendar. They used to say, we can forecast when the Nile will overflow. We don't need God. We don't need God's rain. We deal. We have our irrigation system. We have our understanding of the calendar. We're in control. We don't need God. We don't need this concept of a limitless being above us. Pharaoh says, where's God? Who's God? I never heard of him. It doesn't show up in my books. When Moshe comes to Pharaoh asks him, why do you think I should listen to God? Right? That's the conversation the Torah records. Who is he that I should listen to him? And that's why the Egyptians sunk in their sorcery, in their defilement. The distinction between the forces of holiness and defilement. Holiness comes where there is humility. ויודעת כי מגל מתלת לכלום זו מלכות שמיים מלאה. The forces of holiness is where a person can say, what are you talking to me? What did I do? Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, after all the miracles they did, when the Jewish people come complaining, they say, who are we? There's a problem here. Let's turn to God. But what? We're the source of something? What are you turning to us for? So the concept of the force of holiness is the idea that Hashem's running the world. Lo ken atuma. But the forces of defilement are the exact opposite. Ha'omeret ani v'afsi od. What does Pharaoh say? Pharaoh says, I created myself. Right? That was one of Pharaoh's claims. Pharaoh said, I was never born. I am God. There's none but me. V'zoyta tumat Mitzrayim. That's the defilement of Egypt. Sheitparu shakol ma'briya atzma. The Egyptians claimed everything is part of nature. Everything's been here. There's no force above us. God is not there. We can take care of ourselves. V'shvil sheyadu ki atidim Yisrael legalot amosh b'torah. B'chinat ensof lelamed latoyim bina. They knew that Israel was coming to the world to reveal the opposite, to show that there is an infinite force in the world. Ki Hashem hu Elokim b'shamayim mimal v'aratz mitachtenot. Hashem controls the world from above to below. He's in full control. Havidut Yisrael befarech. That's why they made the Jews work so hard. They said, Tichbad avodah l'anshim v'yasubam v'alishu b'divrei shakar. Let them work hard and not be distracted with lies. Nefi shebechol devar klipa makdemet. Because we have a rule. It's a Kabbalistic concept. It's a concept we've seen numerous times in Hasidut. There's always the external before you reach the internal. What's called the klipa. Kadma avodat Mitzrayim v'shichuram shel Yisrael v'kabalatam t'Torah. First the Jewish people were in servitude before they could become free and receive the Torah. Hashem describes the involvement as Botziacha et ha'am mi'Mitzrayim. God tells Moshe, you'll take them out of Egypt, and then Tavdun Talokim al Arazeh, you'll serve Hashem on this mountain. Velchitzatam shel Mitzrayim b'Yisraeli, asher otzia et chevyonam shel Yisrael, asher lo tzamu l'mayim lo ravu l'lechem kim lishma dvar Hashem. What happens is, when the Jews are oppressed in Egypt, the thing that really bothers them is not a lack of water, it's not a lack of bread. It is the desire to hear the word of Hashem. Ve'imach lo chafatzti ba'aretz uval ishberu tzimonam zulat bi'ikaret in sof ve'kiblu tatra l'ar Sinai. They said, Rabbon Shalom, the only thing that will quench our thirst now is connecting to you, receiving your Torah. La'arot she'gam avayam tzumtzemet ha'Torah she'bemispar nitnu otiyotea ve'tevotea hinenu mekablim otam milmala. The concept of Sinai is that Hashem is giving something finite. He's giving us a very defined Torah in the written Torah. Every letter is counted. You know how many letters are in the Aseres HaDibros, Ten Commandments? Every letter is counted. Every word is counted. And even that, which is so finite, we hear as Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf. It's an endless voice. Hashem's voice is powerful as He gives the Torah. It never wanes, right? It's a voice that's a constant, but it's limited. Right? We said what Hashem gives us in this world is limited. Hashem from His end gives us a finite written Torah. So we said, one aspect is Hashem's revelation in the world, where Hashem keeps it very limited. The other aspect is our task in the world, where we try to reveal infinite greatness. Each one has an opposing force. Hashem's revelation has the opposing force of Mitzrayim. And the same is true with the oral law. We said there's always the external that comes first. That's the wisdom of the people of the East. There were tremendously wise people. King Solomon is compared to the wise people of the East. In Job, he's compared to the wise people of the East. There was a wisdom out there. And everything in Tanakh, we find that very wise people are compared to that wisdom. והם גם כן אשר מתוך לחיצתם יצאם נתגלתה חוכמת התורה שבעל פה. It is from their oppression that the wisdom of the oral law was revealed. When King Solomon is described, it says, ותרב חוכמת שלמה מכל חוכמת בני קדם. King Solomon was smarter than all the wise people of the East. שלמה היה נועד להיות משיח בן דוד. Solomon was supposed to be the Messiah, the son of David, right? He was the son of David. That's what was supposed to happen. That's why he was granted this tremendous wisdom, because he was supposed to do something with it. He understood how all wisdom emanates from Torah. Now, this is what our parasha says. Natan Avraham Matanot, it says Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines and sent them off to the east. Ki kmo she'ne'emar lo tetev mitzri ki ger hayita me'artzo, just as the Torah says, don't look at an Egyptian in a disgusting light, because bottom line, you were a sojourner in their land. V'ainyan she'im omnam em ayu mitzirim ne'Yisrael alo al kopanim mitoch al-chitza shlem yatzan shenitgalai b'Yisrael koch kedushatam lekabel t'Torah. Even though the Egyptians oppressed us, that was the place that helped us develop into what we were. Ken natan matana zo libnei al-pilagshim. By the same token, Abraham gives this gift to the sons of the concubines. Shel chitzotam she'ilchatzu et Yisrael tiyeh rak begufam, ach beruham tavo mizeh tshuah le'Yisrael. The people of the East oppressed us physically, but from their spirit ultimately evolved the great revelation, the great hidden light of Torah Shebe'al Peh of the Jewish people. Okay, we're in the middle of a thought, but V'hinei af shekol magamatam sheYisrael legalot et or ein sof zehu rak b'shvil atzmam. Even though the Jewish people work to reveal the limitless light, that's for themselves. But the Jewish people's effect on the world and on the nations, there were very limited. Because there's a limit to what you can say to people all over the world. What can you publicize? What can you actually affect them where they're holding, with their nature? Umidatam, v'kumo klapei mala, and just as up above, essentially Hashem is a limitless light. But from our perspective, he has, the revelations are limited. And that's like a minute aspect of the Ribbono Shel Olam, what we get to see. But that's what we can handle. You want to understand the essence of the Jewish people? That's a level that's internal. We can't show that to the world. They're not going to understand us.
But we gave so much.
We are busy connecting and revealing a light that's limitless. And our impact on the world, that's a nice addition. It's not the essence. We have our task here. We affect the world, but we're so limited in our impact on the world. It's true, through that impact they can evolve. They have potential. But our essence is not that. Okay, even there.
Yeah.
So this is what Sarah was doing. Sarah was telling Avram, you want a house where there's impact. Very nice, Yitzchak's going to affect Ishmael. But I want Yitzchak to live up to his potential. First, I want him to reach, not to be limited. I want the Jewish people to grow to the level where they can reach. She says, chase away this maid and her son. He won't inherit the son of the maid with my son with Yitzchak. Now notice the difference. Yitzchak and Mitzachek. She notices the son of the maid, the son of the Egyptian Hagar, who is Mitzachik. Which commentary, says Rav Harlap, is it that he was serving idols? Is it that he was being promiscuous with prohibited women? Is it that he was murdering? Which one was it? Bottom line, it says he was doing something wrong, but Mitzachik, he was affecting Yitzchak. His venom was going into Yitzchak. She felt like he's the big brother in the house. I'm not capable of bringing up Yitzchak to his potential when Yishmael is doing this on the side. Be Yitzchak Yikarei L'chazara. And Rav Chalap says a phenomenal thought. He says, you know why Yitzchak had a son named Esav? Because he had a brother named Yishmael. Yishmael affected Yitzchak, and that's what caused Yitzchak to be divided. That's why God tells Yitzchak, only part of you is the future of the Jewish people. Be Yitzchak, part of you. Why? Because of that. He says that was Yishmael's effect on Yitzchak. And Sarah sensed this, and that's why she warned Avram that even though Avram sees his job as cosmopolitan, Hashem tells him, Avamon Goyim, you're responsible for the masses of the nations to affect the whole world. And that's why he says, I'm supposed to affect the whole world and I got to send my own son away?
He looks at Sarah, what's going on here? Hashem said, I am the father of nations. I'm supposed to affect the whole world. But my own son I can't affect. I have to send him away. So Avram was devastated. And she says, no, it doesn't work that way. Because you're developing your home. You're developing your son. That son has to develop to be the limitless Yitzchak. Yeah, and so he says Sarah was the concept of Israel. Her goal in the world was to be unique, the mother of Israel. Abraham was given the task to be father of nations. Our sages say Abraham was secondary to Sarah in prophecy. Prophecy is a Jewish thing. The Nevuah is in Israel. And Hashem says to him, what she says, listen to him. Because in essence, the fundamental task of Israel is to be limitless. That's the first concept he spoke about. What's our job? Our first job, our primary task is to live up to our potential. The fact that we affect the nations, that's a secondary task. And Rav Chalap says, the delay in sending away Yishmael had allowed Yishmael to affect Yitzchak. And that's why Yitzchak did not live up to his potential. And he had within him the element that ultimately gave birth to Esav. And Esav had that potential of the oral law. Esav had the light of Yitzchak within him. He says that's why from Esav came out Gerim. And the Gerim are a tremendous source of Torah Shebaal Peh for the Jewish people. All of the Torah Shebaal Peh, Rabbi Akiva, is a descendant of Gerim. Rabbi Meir is a descendant of Gerim. The whole mission is Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Akiva, right? The oral law, it rests on the shoulders of lights that came from the nations. And that, he says, is why Yitzchak loved Esav so much, because he saw the light in Esav. He saw the potential that would come out in the future. Esav wasn't thinking that way. Esav, the verse says, he said to himself, I'm waiting for my father to die and I'm going to kill Yaakov. Esav was thinking, I want no Torah in the future. And that's why Hashem tells Avram afterwards, after he's gotten rid of Yishmael, Hashem tells Avram, take your son, the singular son that you love, take Yitzchak and take him up as an Ola on one of the mountains I will show you. The Medrash says that ultimately, Avram Avinu said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says, you know, yesterday you told me Yitzchak is my future. And then you told me to offer him. Now you're telling me, don't touch him. Hashem says, I told you to take him up. I didn't tell you to slaughter him. So, wait a second. Avram misunderstood. Rav Chalap says, no. When Hashem says, bring him up as an Ola, obviously built in is to slaughter him. You can't offer him as an Ola. What are you going to do, burn him alive? That's obviously, Avram did understand. But Hashem initially said a wording that could be understood in two ways, so that the parasha will end the way it ended. Many asked, why didn't Avram ask the question beforehand? Hashem, you told me this way, now you're telling me that way. Because it's not a contradiction. The answer he's giving now is a Ramban. That when Avram was told to slaughter Yitzchak, he said to himself, I guess the Ribbono Shel Olam intends to bring him back to life. The Ramban says, one of the sources for Tchiyat HaMetim is the Akedah. He says, how could you understand that Avram was willing to slaughter Yitzchak? Must be that Avram understood. This is one of the lines the Ramban writes. He said to himself, God obviously intends to bring him back. He said to himself, okay, he's telling me to do this now, but if Hashem promised me that he's my future, so then I don't know how he's going to do it, but obviously that's his intention. And that's why he didn't ask anything. But when Hashem says, don't touch him, then Avram says, wait. Now I don't understand. Beforehand, I thought I understood. Now I don't understand. Why is there the Akedah, says Rav Chalap? I don't know if we should go this far. You guys wanted to switch the learning. So.
Great question. If he knows beforehand that he's going to stop him or bring him back, Does it in any way lessen the greatness of Abraham's offering or Yitzhak's willingness?
We're halfway through this piece, but I don't know if you guys want to continue. Rav Chailap says the main point of the Akedah was to fix that which Yishmael had influenced Yitzhak. When Yishmael was joking around and playing games with showing how you could be promiscuous, you can kill, you find excuses, you find ways out, you can do it. And technically, the Akedah could have played itself out, says Rav Chailap, that Yitzchak would have died and been resurrected and come back. And then he would have been clean of everything. The idea was Yitzchak had to be cleansed. And had that happened, then Yitzchak would have come back and been a completely clean being. And then he says, all the problems in Jewish history where we were influenced negatively, and we find that we were able to be influenced, and the nations could pull us down. Well, that's because down the line, from the roots, there was a problem. There was an influence that allowed us to be pulled down. And this would have purified Yitzchak. The Pasuk says, "Hin am levadad yishkon." This nation dwells alone. No one can touch them. That was our potential. And that's what Sarah wanted. She wanted Yitzchak to be there and to attain his heights and not be dragged down. But there were different things, which he's not going into now. Maybe he went into them Parshas Vayera. He says there were numerous reasons that forced the circumstances that it didn't come to fruition. And Hashem, on the contrary, tells him, don't touch him. And when Sarah hears, if you look closely at Rashi, it's always wondersome. Rashi says, when she heard he wasn't slaughtered, then she passed away. Why? Rashi should have said when she heard he was almost slaughtered, and that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says when she heard he was not. She felt so bad, she said, so Yitzchak's not where he should be. When she heard that, she said, Yitzchak, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave him a potential to be a different person. But no, he's still going to be that Yitzchak who was influenced by Yishmael. When she heard that the Akedah ended the way it did, she said, so now my future is not everything I've lived for. And that's the pain that caused her to die. Well, it's actually the wording of the Rashi. If I was accurate in the way I translated Rashi, I don't know if you guys paid attention. Rashi says he was brought to Shechita and almost not slaughtered. What does that mean, almost not slaughtered? It should have said almost slaughtered.
Right. That's great. I just usually the way people tell it over is that Sarah was so distressed with him. Because he was.
What Sarah realized is what the future would hold. That if Yitzchak is still going to be with the influence of Yishmael, then it's going to be a long, hard road. Right. And there's still going to be an Esav within Yitzchak. And when Avram understood that if he's not going to move forward, then he's going to have to continue living with a world where the impact of his mistake of leaving Yishmael around is going to continue. So that's when Avram asks, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're sure you want me to do that?
But maybe the beauty would get in your law.
And Hashem's answer is, yes. You have to interpret ha'aleu le'ola, not don't slaughter him. And Avram wouldn't be calmed until Hashem tells him, you can slaughter an animal instead. And now we understand, we said now in Tfilat Geshem on Sukkot, it says, v'shichat lehoro l'shochto, lishpoch damo kamaim, v'sachtam, sorry. You said to his father to slaughter him, to spill his blood like water. Wait, why do we say you told him to spill his blood like water? We say that Hashem said, I never told you to spill his blood, right? That's what we say. No. If things would have worked out right, then Hashem would have allowed the interpretation to come to fruition and Yitzchak would have come back in a different form as a pure person. And then it says Avram went back to the lads. Everyone stayed alive. And he went back. They're reconnecting with Yishmael, who is one of the lads, right? Had Yitzchak really been where he should have been, so then they would not have gone back to the lands. The idea that they come off of the Akedah and they go back, well, that's the idea that we're coming back, and there's a lot of wonderful things that happened, and there's a new connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we've proven a new dedication to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but we're still coming back to the lands. We're still connected to Yishmael. So, Rav Charlap continues, and he says that when we look at Adam's transgression that brought death to the world, we look at Adam as being the soul that encompasses all of humanity. Well, the actions of the soul can be divided. The actions don't affect every part of the soul equally. And he says the act of eating from the forbidden fruit affected the soul in two different ways. Hashem says, when you eat from the forbidden fruit, I want you to know, die you shall die. Why does the Pasuk repeat, die you shall die? So Rav Charlap says there are two types of death, just like there are two types of life. There's the life of the individual and there's the life of the nation. There's the death of the individual and there's the death of the nation. When Adam ate from the fruit, so there were different parts of his soul that partook of that action. We said that Adam's soul is the soul of the world. It's everything comes from that soul, right? They say there was one big neshama Hashem created in Adam, and then we're all parts of that neshama that continue in the world. And so the nations got the part that would be death to the individual and death to the nation. That you could, both can happen, that the individual dies, and the nation can also disappear. But Israel got Israel's part of the soul only got the curse that the individual dies. Hashem promises us that we as a nation are never going to die. And that's what the Talmud says. Yaakov Avinu didn't die. The Talmud says this in numerous places. It says the Pasuk compares Yaakov to his children. Just as his children are still around, Yaakov is still alive. That's what the Talmud says. We don't know what that means. The Gemara asks, you know, they mummified him. What were they doing? They eulogized him. They mourned him. The verse describes many things that happened after his death. But we see the idea that the Jewish people are always going to live, and that's the proof. You see, Yaakov's still living, whatever that means. Sarah, her focus in life was to reveal the concept of Israel as a unique nation and to ensure that Israel would be a pure nation. And had she attained that, she was striving for it. Had she attained that, she would have elevated us to a point where not only the people of Israel would never die, the individuals wouldn't either. As the Navi prophesizes, that when Mashiach's going to come and fix things in this world, so then Bila HaMavet LaNetzach, death is going to wear away from the world forever. There won't be such a thing as death. And that's why, so long as Sarah was alive, Avram doesn't prepare a burial plot for her. They're old people. Why didn't he prepare? It has to be that she dies and now he's with the body in front of him. He has to run around and figure out how he's burying her. Why wasn't he prepared? Because he was always hopeful that she's going to bring us to where we're supposed to be. And Avram goes and says, I want to buy from you a burial plot. Part of what he's saying is, yeah, death was brought to the world because of people who live their lives improperly. He buys the cave of Marata Machpelah. Why Machpelah double? Because death is where the body and the soul separate. The soul goes up and the body goes down. But by the patriarchs, the death wasn't the same type of death. It was, so to speak, a short-lived death. You know, there's a famous story about a guy who he was the wealthy guy in town and he never gave a penny to anyone. And every time there were poor people and there were all kinds of needs, he would never partake. And then the time came, he got old, he went to the Chevra Kadisha, he said, I want to buy a burial plot. So they said, okay, for you it's $5 million. So the guy says, what are you talking about? Everyone else buys it for $1,000, $2,000. You're selling it for me for $5 million? No way. So they said, sorry, buddy, that's the price. So he took them to court. So when they came to court, he said, why are they charging me so much more than everyone else? So the man from the Chevra Kadisha said, he said, it's like this. Everyone else gets buried, and we believe that there's going to be a resurrection of the dead. So we're selling it to them for a year, for 2 years, for 5 years, whatever, eventually they're leaving. But you, the way you've led your life, you're taking it forever. So we say that when the patriarchs died, their death was a different death. It was so to speak, short-lived, because the Talmud describes how when sages would visit Marat HaMachpelah, they would find Abraham and Sarah there, awake and talking, active. It says Elio goes every Rosh Chodesh to Marat HaMachpelah, and he brings up Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and all the matriarchs, and they all pray. It says every Rosh Chodesh, Elio goes to Marat HaMachpelah. Every one of them gets up as though they're in a slumber. So this idea that the soul separates from the body when they die, well, their soul separated different than everyone else's soul separates from their body. And it's as though the soul is hovering above the body when they pass away. And that was the idea of burying in a cave that has two levels, to reflect the idea that there's still life hovering over the dead body. And that's what the Holy Zohar writes, that when Avram went into the cave and Sarah went into the cave, so Adam and Eve got up and said, what are you guys doing in our cave? And Abraham and Eve didn't want to let them in. And they said, you know, in the world to come, we're so embarrassed of the Ribbono Shel Olam because of what we did wrong. Now we'll have another embarrassment that we're next to you, Abraham and Sarah, and all the good things you did. So Adam and Eve said to Abraham and Sarah, "We're not. What are you guys coming into our cave for?" So Avram said, "I'm gonna go and speak on your behalf, Adam. I'm gonna talk to Ribbono Shel Olam, so that you won't continue being embarrassed." And only after that, after he made that deal with Adam and Eve, that he's gonna pray on their behalf, then they agreed. And afterwards, Abraham could bury Sarah. What does it mean afterwards? After Abraham accepted upon himself, Adam went back to his place, and Eve didn't go back until Avram was buried, and then she went back next to Adam. The Medrash seems to say she couldn't go lie down next to Adam till Abraham had done his task. When Adam looked at all the beautiful things Avram and Sarah did, he was embarrassed. That's what the Zohar is saying. That Adam said to Avram and Sarah, I'm embarrassed enough in the world to come. I don't need you next to me, and I'm going to be even more embarrassed. What was Adam's embarrassment of Avram and Sarah? Adam was saying, it's my fault that beautiful people like you die. Adam was looking at Avram and Sarah and saying, look at what a beautiful life you led. Now it's not enough that I'm embarrassed for what I did wrong to me. I have to be embarrassed for what I did wrong to you. And that's why Avram promises him, don't worry, I'm going to pray for you, because it doesn't end with our passing. Our death is not like everyone else's death. And he tells him, you won't be embarrassed anymore, because you'll see that what you did didn't impact the world the way you think. That good people can still have an impact in the world. They're still around. It's not like they're gone forever. And Avram, so to speak, is revealing to him the concept of Tchiyat HaMetim. Tchiyat HaMetim is through Torah. It says, the Talmud says, why do common people get Tchiyat HaMetim? If Tchiyat HaMetim is through Torah, it says because they also funded learning Torah. Why do women come in Tchiyat HaMetim? Because they help their husbands learn Torah. It says you have to be connected to Torah in order to come back. Torah is the life of the world, right? Eitz Chaim, the tree of life in the Garden of Eden, is the Torah. That's our tradition. So that's why Adam doesn't let Sarah be buried until Avram promises him that he's going to show the world that people are coming back. This is a concept of Hirsch also spoke about, that when Avram makes such an issue about buying a plot for Sarah, What he's teaching the world is that you invest in the body after it dies. Things aren't over when the body dies. They used to bury the body and then plow over it. They used to make carpets out of the body. They used to use it as fertilizer. That was Avram's concern. Why does he want a cave? Why does he want the field? Why does he want to ensure? He wants to tell them, guys, when the body dies, we respect it. We don't just bury it and then plow over it, which is what they did. That was so that reverses, that was part of what Avram was teaching the world. The idea that you sanctify the body, and you see it worked. The nations have cemeteries. Why do they have cemeteries?
Well, they spend money in crypts, and, you know, but that's not a good thing necessarily. Egypt took it to the most extreme.
Okay.
Buried servants with it. I mean, the idea of Judaism, there's something beautiful about the pine box and the limited amount that one wants to spend in a special place. But, also, this is probably a Thursday night, but if the Athanasi is what we strive for, where does Olam Haba come in?
Who said we strive for it? Avraham was illustrating to the world, it's not over. We still treat the body with respect. And that was Avraham's comfort to Adam and Eve, that what they did is not infinitely bad. What they did is still going to be undone. People are still going to have Tchiyat HaMetim.
Right. So Tchiyat HaMetim is a good thing. But I know that there are differences between, I don't know what exactly, between Tchiyat HaMetim and
Thursday night, right. We conclude this piece by Rav Charlap. He says like this, Avram and Sarah, their connection is eternal. Yitzchak and Rivka, their connection is eternal. Part of their impact on the world was their connection. Avram and Sarah's connection, Yitzchak and Rivka's connection. And they revealed to the world the idea of a couple unifying. They revealed to the world the idea that Am Yisrael can be united with their Creator. And that's what Avram says about Sarah, and Yitzchak says about Rivka, Achotihi, she is my sister. The idea is, when we think about a wife, we think there's potential for divorce. When you think about a sibling, you're forever connected. Part of Avram's declaration, Achoti, just like we find in the Song of Songs, God says about the Jewish people, you're my sister. Don't think you're a wife where there's always that potential that our connection ends. No, you're my sister. We're connected forever. And so that's reflected in the burial of Avram together with Sarah, the idea that they're together forever. And that's what Rabbi Binah says, that when he went into the Me'aras HaMachpelah, he saw Avram resting his head on Sarah's lap. The Talmud quotes a story. One of the rabbis went to Me'aras HaMachpelah and he sees Avram with his head on Sarah's lap. And she's dealing with his hair. So Avram and Sarah, even in their burial, are revealing the idea of unity, of a couple together. The idea that Am Yisrael can connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If Yaakov would have been buried with his Zivug, with his the real woman he connected to, with Rachel, so then the world would have been a different place. Then just as we say Yaakov is still acting in the world, we also say Rachel is still acting in the world. We don't say that about Leah, right? Rachel is still crying. They both reflect the idea that they're still connected to their living children. Rachel gets buried on the path, Bederech Ephrata and Beit Lechem. She's still crying, her voice goes to heaven, and a heavenly voice has to answer her, you know, they're still coming back. Well, Me'aras HaMachpelah and Kever Rachel, they're going to connect one day. And then, when those two come together, that's the beginning of the beginning of the better future, the idea of eternal peace in the world, the idea of Am Yisrael giving off their complete light, which Yaakov wanted to do, Yaakov couldn't do. That's the idea we saw in the beginning, that Yaakov still has to deal with an Esav. Things are not in perfection. That was what Sarah wanted to prevent. That was what the Akedah had potential to accomplish, but did not accomplish ultimately. We still have a Yishmael from that, we still have an Esav, and we still have Yaakov and his wife not connected for eternity. They're still going to be connected, but they're not yet there.